Well, welcome to another 2 hours of Jewish Soul Music. I'm your host, Charlie Bernhout. Each week, I try to bring you an interesting mixture of Chazonis and non-Chazonis recordings. This evening, most of the selections will be referring to Yerushalayim. As you know, I'll be in Jerusalem for Yom Yerushalayim the following week, and I'll tell you right now, I have two special programs prepared for next Monday evening, the 30th, and for June 6th. Next Monday, the 30th, will be a special rebroadcast of a two-hour special. It was a Kabbalah Shabbos and Ma'ariv Davening that was first broadcast in 1991, 20 years ago. And the following week, it will be a Shabbos Musaf, a complete davening, taking you right from the beginning to the end. And that was first broadcast in 1992. Some of you have been with me for many years. You know that those were real classics, and I'm very pleased to present these to those of you who were not around those years. I'm sure that those of you who love Chazonis will certainly enjoy those programs. And as I mentioned, I'll be leaving on the 29th for 2 weeks. Going on a Chizuk group that's sponsored by AFSI, Americans for Safe Israel. We do the whole Judea-Samaria bit, and we'll be visiting friends from Gush Katif. We'll be going to Gush Etzion, Hebron Hills, a visit with Nadia Matar. Wednesday, June 1st, we'll be back in Jerusalem, Yom Yerushalayim. Then we go up to the Shomron. We'll go to Itamar, visit the Fogel family, Chavat Gilad, and then we'll go to Haifa and the north. We haven't been to the north for a while. We're going to spend Shabbat in Tzfat, staying at the Rimon Inn. That's a beautiful place. And then we'll be going to the Golan, the Lebanese border, Kiryat Shmona, and so forth. And then I'll be spending a week in Jerusalem. And as I told you, it's so exciting. On Thursday evening, I'll be going with our friends Mickey and Eva Weinberger to see Aida on Masada. That should be very, very interesting. Okay, tonight, by the way, there'll be two interviews that I recorded earlier today. One is with Rabbi Chaim Wasserman, who was formerly of the Young Israel of Passaic and Clifton, who made Aliyah 6 years ago. He'll be during the first hour. And during the second hour, Rabbi Stephen Przanski of B'nai Yeshurun in Teaneck will be giving his commentaries. And in between, I'll be playing some music, some chazonis, and the like. Okay, this is an interesting selection. Some of you may have heard it before. There was a show in Broadway. It was called To Live Another Summer, To Pass Another Winter. It appeared in 1971, that's 40 years ago, and it was an interesting group. I think that's when they introduced Tain Shabbat V'Tain Shalom. I think that was from that play. Anyway, we're going to hear Sorry We Won It. And I got to read the words first. You'll hear the music. We're so ashamed. We really didn't mean to. Who'd think that such a thing was in the cards? Our blindfolds ready, our throats were washed and clean. You had nothing else to do but bring the swords. But while all of them were sharpening the knives and somebody was very, very still, we grew so scared, we jumped up straight and closed our eyes and bang, we just lashed out against our will. We're sorry we won it, we must have overdone it. We know quite well that the Jew has his place. A Jew who is a winner is a disgrace. Oh, please, world, excuse us. We're asking you for forgiveness. We're awfully sorry. We're sorry we won the war. Well, now it's done, and we made some people angry. It's true that's not so very neighborly. But with all the screaming, those terrible harangues, and we heard the rumors that we got pushed into the sea, in history, the Jew is not a winner. We knew this at the Mediterranean, but faced with all that water there to drink for dinner, we lost our nerve, and we were as we were stepping in. Well, now we've learned, and we promise you quite truly, a promise we hope that you would not misuse. If faced with battle from king or sheikh or coolie, we promise we'll do everything to lose. And once again, the world can shed its tears and cry and pray. We'll make it out somehow. You've been just wonderful to us through all the years. We wouldn't want to spoil your pleasure now. Okay, we're sorry. We won it from 1971, 40 years ago.
Did you hear? Did you hear? Did you hear? We lost sympathy again.
What? With whom did we lose sympathy this time?
France.
With how many nations did we lose sympathy up till now?
90.
And with how many nations has poor Pakistani refugees gained sympathy?
90 or 95.
And Biafra?
Almost all the world sympathized with Biafra.
Oh, it's horrible. But it looks like it's better to live without sympathy than to be dead with sympathy.
We're so ashamed, we really didn't mean to. Would think that such a thing was in the cards. Our blind falls ready, our throats are washed and clean. You have nothing else to do but bring the swords. But when somebody was sharpening the knives, and everyone else was very, very still, we grew so scared, we jumped up straight and closed our eyes. And then we just lashed out against our will. We're sorry we won it, we must have overdone it. We know quite well that a Jew has his place. A Jew who is a winner is a disgrace. Oh, please, well, excuse us, we're asking you for forgiveness. We're awfully sorry, we're sorry we won the war.
Well, now it's done, and we made some people angry. It's true, that's not so very neighborly. But all the screaming of those terrible herrings, we heard rumors we'd get pushed into the sea.
In history, the Jew is never winner. We knew this at the many ready end. But faced with all that war, we had to bring for dinner. We lost our guts as we were stepping in. We're sorry we won it, we must have overdone it. We know quite well that a Jew has his place. A Jew who is a winner is a disgrace. Oh, please, well, excuse us, we're asking for forgiveness. We're awfully sorry, we're sorry we won the war. Well, now we've learned, and we promise you quite truly, a promise we know you would not misuse. If faced with battle, from king or prince or coolie, we promise we'll do everything to lose. And once again the world can shed its tears, and cry and pray we'll make it out somehow. You've been just wonderful to us through all the years. We wouldn't want to spoil your pleasure now. We're sorry we won it, we must have overdone it. We know quite well that a Jew has his place. A Jew who is a winner is a disgrace. Oh, please, world, excuse us. We're asking you for forgiveness. We're awfully sorry. We're sorry we won the war. Oh, please, world, excuse us. We're asking you for forgiveness. We're awfully sorry. We're sorry we won the war.
Okay, we're sorry we won the war. Very, very, very interesting. Okay, let's go to a song from that play. It was called Tain Shalom, V'tain Shabbat. As I said, many of the songs that I'll be playing now pertain to Yerushalayim. This is wonderful Yoram Gaon's version, Tain Shabbat, V'tain Shalom.
Thank you. גלים כבר מתארחים אחר הצהריים תן שבת ותן שלום בעיר ירושלים ותן לנו שאת מלכות כזאת שבין ארבעים תן שלום ותן שבת בעיר ירושלים שבת ותן שלום בעיר ירושלים הנה שלום יורד עליי יורד בצהור נפיים תן שלום ותן שבת שבת ותן שלום בעיר ירושלים אור גדול הנה נדלק בראשוני עיניים תן שלום ותן שבת בעיר ירושלים תן שבת ותן שלום 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 בעיר ירושלים
Yoram Gaon with Tein Shabbat and Tein Shalom. Our next selection will be May Al Pisgat Har Hatzofim from Mount Scopus.
Thank you. מעל פסגת הר הצופים אשתחווה לך הפעים מעל פסגת הר הצופים שלום לך ירושלים אלפי דורות חלמתי עלייך לראות לזכות באור פנייך ירושלים ירושלים האיר פנייך לבני חורבותייך אבנה מעל פסגת הר הצופים אשתחווה לך הפנים מעל פסגת הר הצופים שלום לך ירושלים באלפי ברכות היי ברוכה מקדש מלך עיר מלוכה ירושלים ירושלים אני לא אסוס מפה
That was Me'al Pisgat Har HaTzofim from Mount Scopus. Next selection will be the Arad Singers with Ki Mitzion. Ki Mitzion Tetzé Torah. Something like that.
Mitzion tetze Torah, ki mitzion tetze Torah, ki mitzion tetze Torah, udvar Hashem mirushalayim, mirushalayim, ki mitzion tetze Torah, ki mitzion tetze Torah, ki mitzion tetze Torah, tetze Torah.
Yeah.
That was the Arad Singers with Ki Mitzion. The next selection, I was going to play Can You Name That Singer, but many of you will recognize it. It's an early recording of David Fisher, otherwise known as Dudu. And this is Yerushalayim Forever, Jerusalem Forever. Well, that should be Jerusalem Forever, but let's just see what happened here. Give me 1 second. Mechanical problem. And there it is. Jerusalem Forever. Is that 7? Oh, there it is. Okay.
Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim, Abenuya, Keir Shechubrala, Keir Shechubrala, La Yahda, Imeshachef Yerushalayim.
Like that selection. That was Dudu Fisher. Dudu Fisher with Jerusalem Forever. Now, I mentioned at the outset there were two interviews. Let's proceed with Rabbi Chaim Wasserman. Rabbi Chaim Wasserman. Rabbi Chaim Wasserman, who was formerly at the Young Israel of Passaic Clifton, is currently the president of the Young Israel Rabbis in Israel. He made Aliyah about 6 years ago, but in the late 80s and the early 90s, Rabbi Wasserman was a regular contributor to my program. Good evening, Rabbi Wasserman.
Good evening to you, Sir Charlie.
Okay, we're going through some very interesting times, to say the least.
interesting but very difficult. These are critical moments. We're at a point that I would tend to think we haven't been in for many, many years now.
It's sort of the coming together of what's going on in the Arab world generally, and with our unfortunate situation, I guess, with our current president here in the United States.
Well, it's not only the president. It's the entire quartet, which essentially is the whole world. We're not at the miraculous moment when President Truman went ahead 11 minutes after Ben-Gurion declared a state, and for some reason went ahead and had the United States come on board. Here we have a world that is just sympathizing, empathizing, and cannot begin to appreciate the value of a state of Israel for United States ally reasons, and for in and of itself what the state has accomplished in 65 years.
Would you say it's anti-Semitism, or would you say combined with the religious war of Islam against the West?
Look, you have anti-Semitism as the Hebrew word is the tashtit, the subterranean canvas upon which everything is painted. When the effects of the Holocaust were real, excuse me, because of it being so close, then maybe there was a world that kept quiet. When there were refugees that had to be dealt with, and no country wanted them, fact of the matter, so let's get them to Israel. Today, all of Europe is populated by a Muslim segment, a sector, and in a democracy like London, like Britain and France, you've got to realize that they now have a voice that if it is anti-Semitic, that's the way it's going to be. You flow in the political arena with what the people want.
It does seem daunting, to say the least. I think people somewhat ignore the religious aspect of this.
Well, look, let me just dwell for one more moment on the political, which I'm certainly not a political scientist, and I don't understand anything other than what was told to me once, that the definition of politics is the art of the possible. The Jewish community of northern New Jersey had a political spokesman and representative who was a long-time elected official in the United States Congress. As far as the Jewish community was concerned, he was the tops. When the major population of his voter base had changed with the influx of a huge Muslim Arabic immigrant culture, all of a sudden you see things are totally different. His pronouncements and the letters that he signs are totally different. Mm. So it's here also.
Uh-huh.
The Muslim group is growing and growing, and that has to be understood. And the Jews in numbers are diminishing, essentially, for whatever reason. Moreover, this new manifestation within the American Jewish community of a new political action committee called J Street, where they represent themselves as pro Israel, but a pro-Israel of a left-wing kind that will leave us with, if we were to implement those policies, that would leave us with a state of Israel that that is a fraction of what it is today.
Well, Rabbi Kahane always said somehow or other that we can take care of the outside enemies, but it was the Jews that were the problem. And, you know, it does get very frustrating to hear people even dare to say, Jews, that Netanyahu is against peace and that Abbas is really for peace. I mean, they have fallen for this wonderful PR that I don't like calling them Palestinians, but they have been able to foist upon the world.
Well, look, it's got to take more time than I believe you and I have in this conversation to truly understand from their point of view what is going on. Essentially, they are resonating with what we call the Israeli left, which is almost half of the nation. It is certainly not a minority. There are two, you can speak of almost two different cultures in the land of Israel today, the right and the left. The right are the so-called nationalists who are ready to dedicate life and limb to be able to see that Israel is a Jewish state, whatever that means, but nonetheless distinctively Jewish. And on the left, the issue of democracy and the notion that settlers, whatever that means, that term is a term that you have to run away from. It is not democratic, it's not moral, it's not ethical. You are settlers, you're a bunch of bums, and you've got to get out of the so-called territory that belongs to a Palestinian state, because that's democracy and that's ethics. Now, you mentioned my old friend and mentor, Rabbi Kahane. When he said that, he was merely mimicking the words of the prophet Jeremiah, Yirmiyahu. Meharsayich umachrivayich, the prophet said, those who destroy you and those who decimate you, mimech yetzeu, will come from within your ranks.
Wow.
And those are tough words. This he uttered when he saw the destruction of the first temple.
Well, it's certainly fascinating how so-called settlers who were heroes many years ago are now demonized. So,
this has been done by left-wing media in Israel. You see it. I read Haaretz, which is the so-called New York Times of Israel, every single day, and that is the point of view that is perpetrated by that segment and that sector every single day. Then, on the other hand, you have on the right. We've got to call them on the right because they're not on the left, and that is a Haredi community which wants to make Shabbos for itself as best possible, to be able to live in their so-called ghettos, understandably, so that they maintain their way of life unadulterated, and the rest of the country yells and screams that they are on welfare from the state, but just somehow don't give back to the society what is essentially needed. And the most essential factor is civil defense, which they get their military deferment by dint of the fact that they're learning in yeshivas.
But last year, I went to a Zionist award dinner. Well, it was in Yerushalayim, and there was a brigade of Haredi soldiers.
This is revolutionary. And a brigade is what, 1,000, 1,100? But how many are eligible by dint of age for military service?
But at least
or
for
any
start.
Kind of national service?
But at least it's a start, I guess.
There's no question. I am intimately familiar with that. And it is no question that in the next decade, this... excuse me, this concept will grow further and further because of the benefits that it brings to the Haredi society. The welfare system is a dead-end kind of a system, mm-hmm. and the Haredi world wants to feed its children, and you cannot go ahead and do it unless you are integrated into the economic underpinnings of the country. Uh-huh. And the first thing before you get a job, your employer wants to know, are you finished with the Army? Did you serve in the Army? What did you do in the Army? And then the Army is the big educator. You go ahead and you learn things that you don't have to go to college, university for.
Mm-hmm. Next week, next Sunday, I'll be leaving for Israel, and our Chizuk group spends a week going Hebron, Ariel, Tamar, Gilad Farm, and I know my Israeli friends would never dare venture into these areas, and I also know so many Israelis have never been to Yerushalayim, and it just... It's a mystery. It's not a mystery, but it's very unsettling.
Look, Ben-Gurion was right. If you cannot believe in miracles, you cannot believe how or understand how the state of Israel exists. This is the way it goes, and it's a sociological kind of befuddling problem. Which did not exist 25, 30 years ago, but today there are other factors at work. But you mentioned the key word of Ariel, Ran Nachman, this incredible individual who goes ahead and defies all logic and all rational reasoning and builds a city. This is the old spirit, the original spirit of what the founders of the state had. Their motto was Aleph Bet, and Aleph Bet stood for Ein Breira. We have no choice. We've got to push on, and we've got to get to the goal that we have established for ourselves. It's true. This generation is reaping the benefits of the good life, and that means if it's done in Paris, France, you imitate it. If it's done in Rome, you imitate it. If it's New York, you imitate it. If it's Los Angeles, you imitate it, and that's the good life. the masses are attracted by this, but nonetheless, you have segments of leadership that are interested in a good life that will persist in years to come for our children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, and on and on. An example of that is what has gone on, the tremendous metamorphosis in Sahal, in the IDF. The elite in generations past was the kibbutz segment. Yigal Yadin was a kibbutznik, Moshe Dayan was a kibbutznik. They were all kibbutzniks. They were the ones who were the palmach and the top officers all around. Today, you look at the composition of the officers, and you have 25, 30, 40% of officers in officer training and in actual active duty who wear a knitted yarmulke, a kippah seruga. This is mind-boggling that such a thing happens. And then you look at Netanyahu in his recent appointment of two of the top security officials, one for the CIA and the other one for the national security, and both of them wear yarmulkes. And the Haaretz had to deal with it and somehow understand, how is this possible? And they said, it's possible, that's the way it is. 25, 30, 35, 40% of the officers and the top leadership of Tzahal, of the IDF, are kippah-wearing individuals.
And they're going to be called upon to remove, God forbid, the heroes in the so-called settlements, just as they had to do in Gaza a few years back.
I am not so sure of that for two reasons. The first reason is the army and the top defense ministry individuals learned their lesson from what they saw. For the first time, a demonstration of conscientious objectors, a demonstration of those who preferred going to jail. Again, I'm sorry for the coughing. To go to jail rather than to execute an order of their commander to rip out a family from their house by force. That's number one. The lesson was learned. Number two is some information that I have from an extremely reliable source who, when he states such things, some people think he's a kook, other people think he has prophetic vision. The army, according to him, and he shall remain nameless because that's what he wants, has created a battalion of soldiers who have no so-called settler ties. They don't come from the settlements. They don't have family. They certainly are not observant with the kippah seruga. If one had to classify them within Israeli society, you would say that they are all questionably Jewish from the halachic point of view, even though they wear uniforms and have identity passes. In other words, they are from the Russian immigration segment that has come over. They have no such ties. They have no such emotional connections.
They're in black. They dress in these black uniforms?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I really don't know. Uh-huh. But this battalion is going to be the one that will execute the second evacuation.
You think there will be an evacuation?
Do I think? You know, will there be some sort of evacuation? What can I tell you? Realistically, I believe there will be.
But you know, Rabbi, they are so brutal. I forgot the name of the outpost just recently. They went in and just brutalized with horses. It was in the past year or so. It is a non-Jewish Jewish group. delights in brutalizing fellow Jews.
Look, again, I know nothing about politics, but the second lesson that I learned about political science was from a man, a young, who passed on relatively at a young age, but he was an absolute astute student of Middle East politics. And he said that if you look at all the treaties between various sides who are at war, you never get everything. You have to give something. Okay, I heard this from him some 15 years ago, in a Shabbat sermon and a class that he gave at Young Israel of Passaic, and I let it stay. Something is going to have to give. I don't know what, but we start with the 1967 borders. The reaction of Netanyahu is they are indefensible. Forget it. So now the third step was Obama retreated at AIPAC yesterday or the day before, and he told them, look, that's a starting point. Okay, now we'll sit down and worry about a starting point, and something's got to give. I don't know what. I am thankful that all my teeth are anchored in my jaws, in my jawbones, because if my father were around, he'd knock my teeth out just for even saying these things. Similarly to what Begin, Olav HaShalom, said, there is no such thing as a West Bank. It's Judea and Samaria, and these are integral parts of Eretz Israel, just as much as Tel Aviv and Yerushalayim.
Rabbi, you've been living in Israel for 6 years. How has life been?
I've been living in Israel for 56 years. The only thing is, the first 50 was the dream, and in the last 6 years, the dream became real. How's life? Life is beautiful. Life is wonderful. Are there problems? Sure, there are problems, but the biggest problem is you've got to learn how to be an Israeli. Language for me and my wife was never a problem. I speak Hebrew since kindergarten. It's my second and third mother tongue together with English. I'm here, and I'm dying to get back. That's the way it is. We have a wedding of a grandson, our first grandson, 2 days before Shavuot. And my wife and my son and his family are coming in for the wedding today, insist on going back to be back in Israel for Shavuot. I unfortunately have to be here to finish work on behalf of the council of which I became president.
Tell us a little bit about the work of Young Israel. Is it what is the situation in Israel for these religious?
Well, first of all, there are tens of thousands. We've never counted, but if I were to say flippantly, maybe 25,000-30,000, I may be cutting myself short, of Americans, of Anglos, who over the decades have emigrated to Israel. So there is an Anglo community in Netanya, in Ra'anana, in Yerushalayim, in Petah Tikva. Again, I'm sorry for the cough. In Petah Tikva, and all over. And there are 54 Young Israel branches in Israel. However, the Council of Young Israel Rabbis, which is constituted to be a rabbinic organization, yes, of those Young Israel Rabbis who made Aliyah, and there are quite a few, but also other rabbis in Israel, Anglo and non-Anglo, who can identify with what the Young Israel program was here in America. So we have this group. We have an office in Yerushalayim, Heichal Shlomo. We reach out because of our grants from the Jewish Agency to populations other than Young Israel people. In other words, it's not the Council of Young Israel Rabbis is not exclusively or necessarily a synagogue-focused program. So that, for instance, our two flagship programs for which we get a sizable amount from the Jewish Agency, first is something called the Jewish Heritage for the Deaf. The deaf in Israel, and there are an estimated 17 or 18,000 such people, are not necessarily considered disabled, and therefore what the blind get in terms of assistance from the government, the deaf do not get. So we have taken upon ourselves a program where we are, where we organize groups in, depending on the year, between 9 and 12 cities from all the way north to the south, for deaf young people as well as older people. We provide the sign language interpreters at, let's say, a bar mitzvah for a deaf child or other such occasions. There is a group or groups in the various cities before every single Yom Tov for consciousness raising over there. And our finale of the year's program is a mass bar mitzvah and bat mitzvah celebration of those boys and girls who are of bar and bat mitzvah age, where they come to Yerushalayim. We bus them in from all over the country for a day in Yerushalayim with a bar mitzvah ceremony where the boys, each one get a very quality pair of tefillin, and that's their gift for life, as well as the girls getting a very expensive pair of candlesticks for them to begin lighting candles. That's the Jewish heritage for the deaf. It's an ongoing program throughout the year with all kinds of individuals who are capable of conveying to the deaf community the Jewish heritage and Jewish culture, Allah, Young Israel, and Torah Judaism.
Uh-huh.
Then we have a second program that has only one person. She is presently a PhD in Talmud from Bar-Ilan University, an American, who is a rabbinic court advocate on behalf of women who cannot get, for one reason or another, a get, a Jewish religious divorce from their husbands.
Uh-huh.
They are therefore stuck and cannot move on in their lives. These women come to our advocate, Dr. Rachel Levmore, and she is capable not only in guiding them, but her expertise is in mediation. And the rabbinic judges, she works not in our office, but in the courts, in the rabbinic courts, every single day, because they have realized that she is capable of getting either a reconciliation or a get from the husband more readily than they, the rabbinic judges, are able to. And she works there day and night to be able to spare women the status of aguna, of a bound woman to an estranged husband who, for one reason or another, does not want to sever the relationship and issue the get. These two programs are our flagship programs, but then we have in the office a counseling center where short-term counseling is available with professionals, whether or not it would need some kind of rabbinic advice for the situation. We have full-time counselors headed by a brilliant, brilliant woman who's been in this for many years. Now, these three programs cost us a bundle of money. However, there isn't a single person, whether it's the deaf or the aguna or the counseling setting, that is charged anything. This is all a service to the community and has nothing to do with Young Israel per se.
Uh-huh.
Anyone can avail themselves of these services.
Interesting.
And finally, we're a Young Israel Council of Rabbis, so we do serve the needs of the congregations as they turn to us in whatever they need of us.
Interesting. Rabbi, before we end, I want to hear some words of optimism.
No, I want to tell you something. I am an optimist no matter what. However, an optimist cannot be pie in the sky. You've got to face the reality. We're in the midst of tough times, and we've got to be there to weather the storm.
Okay.
And we will.
Oh, we will. Okay.
And we will.
Well, it was good getting together with you again, Rabbi Wasserman. We had many many wonderful comments in the past, and I know you were very active in the Passaic Clifton community, and I do come across quite a few also from your congregation. I understand the congregation is rebuilding.
Yes.
Well, that's
should have done that 45 years ago.
Very
that's it.
Okay, so Mazel Tov on the upcoming Simcha, and I look forward to continuing having an ongoing conversation with you.
All right, but just give me one little postscript. Just
yes.
Remember that if it weren't for the State of Israel and the shuls that we have there, who knows what would have been with the art of Chazanut. Who knows, right? There's no question that it has been revived, and thanks to you and your cantor's world and the whole bunch, there's no doubt. But it needed that nuclear energy from Israel to be able to continue and flourish.
Yes, for sure.
Okay,
play some
Chazanut.
No problem. No problem, Rabbi.
Be well.
Shalom. Well, that was Rabbi Chaim Wasserman, who was in from the States for a Simcha. And as I mentioned, in the 80s, for a few years, he gave commentaries on my program at that time. Please forgive the fact that there was a technical problem, and most of you, well, all of you are listening to this on the archive. Apparently, there was a glitch, or there is a glitch in the computer, and I understand from my friends Julian and Saul that this did not come through over the air. So I guess that's show business. I always talk about technical problems. Okay, however, I am recording the next hour, and it will have Chazanus. It will feature different renditions of Yerushalayim Yircha, and a very interesting commentary by Rabbi Stephen Przanski. Stay with us. Shalom, everyone.